Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminist. This is Deborah. We have another classic from the archives for you. This is from May 2019. The amazing Jen Brister is my co-host, and we talked about shame with our guest, Dolly Alderton. Sometimes on The Guilty Feminist, we take on very serious topics. Sometimes we air our uncomfortable moments, and sometimes we engage in just downright celeb gossip. I feel in this one we cover all the bases, particularly the celeb gossip. DM me to find out who I was talking about. I won't tell you. Please enjoy this episode.
I'm a feminist. But the way my sons talk to me sometimes makes me feel like an abused waiter at a TGI Fridays.
I don't want that. My bowl is the wrong colour. This biscuit is broken, Mama. This biscuit is broken.
I've actually recently found myself on my hands and knees with two bits of broken biscuit. Just trying to cement it back to... Mama put the biscuit back together for my little special boys. Mama loves the special boys, put the biscuit back together. Do you know what I've realised? I realised if a grown man talked to me the way my sons do, I would look at him and go, talk to me like that again, mate, and I will chop it off. I will chop it off and wear it as a bloody earring. But I think I might be part of the problem. That's what I'm saying.
I'm a feminist, but... the other night, I had a premiere in Leicester Square for my film Say My Name.
Oh, Deborah, you're so accessible.
And... and while I was very proud to present the work and we had a Q&A, what I was most excited about, I genuinely got a visceral thrill by this. The paparazzi turned up to take the red carpet pictures, and by midnight that night, we were in the Daily Mail's sidebar of shame. And I got a visceral thrill because it was so funny, because the story was Connie Huck, who was doing brilliantly, turned up to ask the questions at the Q&A, had worn black trousers and a white shirt. That was the story. And you know how the Daily Mail goes, she's teamed black trousers. And then the rest of it, with loads of pictures of us on the red carpet and say my name in the film, great, 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 all great publicity for the film. The rest of it was all about how Conning Huck was married to a man and what that man had said on Desert Island Discs. The whole article was about Charlie Brooker. And I could not stop laughing that my film premiere, which the whole thrust of it was written by a woman, produced by a woman, strong female lead, the whole thrust of it was that. The Daily Mail wrote a full article about Charlie Brooker, who wasn't even there. I could not stop. I was so happy. I felt like, we have made it. We are in the sidebar of entertainment shame on the Daily Mail website, and the article's about Charlie Brooker. And there's me in my plunging V-neck dress. I'm genuinely thrilled.
Well, I think you should get some sort of award for that.
It was like masochism. It was a masochistic thrill.
I'm a feminist, but someone approached me after a show and asked if they could have a selfie, and I said, yeah, because I'm very accessible. And she said, listen, if I take this photo, would you mind if I put it on social media? And I said, sure. Go for it. So she took the photo and she showed it to me and she said, is it all right if I put that on social media? And I looked at it and thought, I look like a cadaver who's had all the blood drained from my body and replaced with formaldehyde. I didn't say that. I went, take another one? And she said, yeah, sure. Great, great, let's have another one. So we had another one. And I looked at it and she went, can I stick that on there? And I thought, I've got that weird chicken neck thing going. You know that your neck sort of does the chickeny thing? And you're like, have I got a chicken neck? And I went, just try another one. And she said, yeah, great. Yeah, let's do another one. So we did another one. And she said, what do you think of that one? And I just thought, I couldn't say no. I was like, yeah, stick that up. I look horrific. And I feel embarrassed to admit that I untagged myself when she put it on.
I've done it. We've all done it. I'm a feminist, but this week I went on Politics Live and there were 5 women on the panel and only one man, but that man was Tom Harwood. And Tom Harwood describes himself on his own website as a journalist, commentator, and digital media producer. And it says he offers a valuable insight into youth issues and the future of the conservative movement. Now, he was the only person on the panel who was very sure what feminism was and how we should all be doing it. I was asked on this panel, was Theresa May a feminist? And I said, I don't think her policies are feminist. I'm not the Santa Claus of feminism. I can't go around going naughty nice. That is not my job to point at people and say they're not feminists. Obviously, the headline they've gone with is, Theresa May is not a feminist, says Deborah Frances White. And to be fair, at some point, I was pushed it. I did say that. She's not. I then made this gesture while he was talking, because he talked longer about feminism than anyone. So I ended up just accidentally making a gesture to camera like this. So that then got picked up on Twitter, because I'm just looking at the camera going,
having your
while a man
moment.
Talks about feminism. And to be fair, it got picked up by Twitter largely because Kelly, who runs the Guilty Feminist Twitter account, tweeted it.
I did retweet it.
With the tagline that said, a man explains feminism to Deborah. And this has taken off. What's delighted me is that Tom Harwood got upset about this and tweeted me and said, hi, Deborah. Instead of a still, how about the video struggling to see here where man explains feminism? And he attached a clip from the video where he explains feminism. And so I wrote back and said, just a joke, Tom. It seems funny that the person who was the most certain about feminism on a panel of women was a man. I will say to you what is always said to women in these situations, have a sense of humour. And he wrote back, right, with lots of eyes in the right. If you could let me know where I was so certain about feminism, I'd be very grateful. Cute cover photo, by the way, kiss, kiss. Because by this point, I admittedly had made this picture of me going like that. My cover photo. I wrote back and said, you were extremely sure of your opinions on feminism, which you presented as fact. It was fine. It's not uncommon. Someone else tweeted the pit, not me. I just joked about it. But I felt the tone of the show was good-natured and you had a sense of humour. Am I wrong? He wrote back, not sure I was certain about feminism, literally prefaced my answer to Joe's question with, it depends what you mean by feminism, doesn't it? And then he defined it in a number of ways. The show was lovely, just a little confused about the post hoc spin. Post hoc spin. And I wrote back, it's not spin, it's just what the women who tweeted me thought when they watched it. Women get talked down to a lot, and I think you got more airtime on feminism than any of the other women on the panel, except me, because I had an interview at the top and it was my only segment. Having said that, some women on Twitter agreed with you, so cheer up. It's only jokes. It's only telly. It's only Twitter. And basically, I realised what I had used was the, you'd be prettier if you smiled, defence against misogyny.
I'm a feminist. But recently in a cafe in Brighton, where I live, after ordering a flat white with oat milk, it's a very attractive waitress who worked there. She went into a really long monologue with a colleague about how dreadful eating meat is and how she was a vegan and how she couldn't understand why anyone wouldn't be a vegan now, particularly when, you know, with global warming and methane gas and all of that, blah, blah, blah. So talking about how the planet was literally on the brink of disaster. And I, on hearing that, as I approached the counter, I ordered a vegan breakfast, and she asked me, so, you know, how long have you been vegan for? And I said, well, 6 years. And she said, that's amazing, because I've only actually been a vegan for a year. And I said, yeah, well, you'll find it just becomes a way of life.
Oh! What?
Yeah, I'm not vegan. I like cheese too much. Who doesn't like cheese?
I'm a feminist, but I accidentally typed Tom Harwood's name as Tom Hardwood. And now that's what I secretly call him in my head. Because I'm incredibly childish. If you're listening, Tom Hardwood... And I know that you're not, because this podcast is about feminism, except you are, because someone told you, I talked about you, and you can't help yourself because you're a narcissist. So now you are listening to it. You are... I mean, I think narcissist is probably unfair. I don't know that. Self-centred. You are listening. And Tom, look, it was good fun, but you did mansplain feminism to me, and you deserve everything you get on Twitter. You've had 10,000 years of domination, Tom, and you were born 1 year too late. Bad luck.
Fair.
Live from King's Place in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Jen Brister, and our very special guests, Dolly Alderton and Kima Bob, talking about shame. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Jen Brister, and we're talking about shame! I feel that shame is guilt not expelled, carried in the body like luggage.
Yeah. It's weird how you can feel shame about something that you're like, why do I feel shame about that?
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 Why?
You know, we were going to talk, rather you didn't want to talk, but I'm going to make you talk about...
What?
Hang on, just
Where's
wait.
This going?
It's going somewhere dark.
Oh,
it isn't.
Shit.
It's fun times. Celebrities.
Yeah.
Things that you say to us, and you're like, I can't talk about it because it's going to make me look like a wanker. Well... I want you to look like a wanker, so tell me this story.
When we have our private chats backstage, Jen...
I like to make them public.
That is what we've realised. No, I just said... Don't...
We can edit it out, but let's just hear the story.
I never would have said the name. I just said a famous American actress. There was no need to say the name. Oh, my God. Well, you are not trusted with anything else.
To be fair, it was Selinsky told me that.
Oh, oh my God, stop.
So a famous American actress, let's pretend we don't know.
Oh, fuck. This is all about. Okay, the reason I didn't want to tell you about it is because when I started this podcast, I never got invited to anything fancy. And the longer it goes on, the fancier and fancier things I get invited to. But I sometimes think, when you're listening to comedians, you know when they're just sort of like, oh, when I was at the bus stop, oh, isn't it funny how people queue up and they're all queuing up for different buses? Relatable. And then they're Michael McIntyre living in fucking Primrose Hill with four cars in the driveway, and they start going, oh, when your limo driver's late, eh, eh, eh? And you think, no, I don't know. And you're a wanker now. And you get distance from them. And I think because this is a feminist show, I think, does anyone want to hear my fucking show business party story? Yeah. Not.
Yeah.
Okay, I was wrong. They're all as vacuous as I am.
That's all we want to know. Well, shall I start with mine, which is really dull?
Thank you.
Okay. You know, when you get drunk and you think, I'm a lot of fun. People are going to want to spend time with this guy. Yeah? Okay, so it turns out I'm not. I'm just a dick. I was at one of the many, at the Edinburgh Festival, they have these bars, which are just for the performers, the artist bars, and they're horrific. And every now and again, I go to one, and they're always awful.
Awful.
Awful. Just people looking above your head. And
over your shoulder.
Snorting coke off your shoes and stuff like that. Not my shoes, someone's shoes.
Reading their five-star reviews at you.
Yeah. Oh, I read your review in the... I'm so sorry. Oh, fuck off. Anyway, so I'm at one of these heady places. And who should be in there?
Who should be in there?
But Paloma Faith. And I... Okay, you can... I'm a feminist, but that in just a second, okay? It's a women's space for women who love women. Now get out.
You can't heckle people who aren't here.
Now listen, you can't say that. So anyway, and I'm not saying that because I don't actually have an opinion, but I was just excited to see her. I was like, fun times. So I did that thing that you do. I don't know if other people, if you've ever done that, where you go up to someone when you're drunk and you're like, tell them their name.
You're Paloma Faith.
She's like, yeah. And then she gave me a look, and I thought, if looks could kill, I would actually be dead. And that look still wakes me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, you get those 3 a.m. go, oh my God, I told Paloma Faith her name. Oh God.
All right. I seriously wasn't going to say this because I think, you know, I went to a party. I don't have a great drive to go up and meet famous people. Like, what am I going to say? It's always a bit awkward. But if I do meet famous people, I'm very rarely weird or starstruck or something like that. Normally, I'm just like, oh, hello, lovely to meet you, big fan. You know, I'm very charming, actually, to famous people. I'm a delight with famous people.
You don't tell them their name?
No. Someone said, oh, is here. I was like, oh, well, that's nice for her. She's here, I'm here.
I like it. Nice for her. I'm here as well.
No. This is definitely not going in the podcast. This is why it's worth coming out to the live shows, because we say all sorts of shit that's absolutely getting cut out. So.
Don't cut this out.
No, I'm 100% cutting this out. So, anyway, I was walking past a comedian who also has made an independent film, and I'd invited him to come and see my independent film, and he hadn't got back to me. And I thought, that's weird, because I know that he's the kind of guy that firstly would get back, and secondly, you know, he loves to see other comedians' films sort of thing. So, as I was walking by, he was talking to somebody, a couple, and they had their backs to me. And so I just put through and said, hey, did you get an invitation to my film? And he said, no, I didn't. I said, I had a premiere. And he said, oh, I didn't know. And I said, well, I definitely invited you. And you know when you're sort of determined to prove it? So I pulled up my phone and I showed him that I had. I said, look, here's the invitation. And he said, oh, well, maybe that's not my number. I'd been in America. So I made him get his phone, show me the number, compare. I was like, oh, taking all of this time. And then I sort of thought, oh, I haven't really introduced myself to the people he's with, who were just standing there like lemons. And so I turned to the right and realised it was and so I mean, you knew that was going. And I just went, oh, and I felt so embarrassed because I thought, he's probably having a wonderful moment. And here I come up, not just to interrupt, but to tell him he has rudely not replied, which I hadn't said he was rude, but the implication was there. And I was making him prove which number it was. And I was doing loads of admin while she stood there next to her very handsome husband. And so I just looked at her and I felt so embarrassed. I just went, you're very famous.
That is worse. I don't think I know who you are, but you're famous, aren't you?
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed. She was so charming. She said, I want to come to your independent film. Please invite me. I said, oh, my God, that's so lovely. She said, I'm moving to Britain. I said, well, I'd love you to do my podcast. She said, oh, I'd love to do your podcast, and told me how to get in touch with her. She couldn't have been more charming. And then I walked away just devastated, but also thinking, what a charming woman. Walked over, met Ed Miliband. He said, oh, I love your podcast.
This feels like a cheese dream, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Too much cheese, and you're like,
he said,
and I met Ed Miliband, and then there was some spaghetti coming out my nose.
He then said, and if you're not from here, he was the leader of the Labour Party, and I said, oh, well, I like your podcast too. I've only ever listened to one episode, but obviously you've got to say that. If someone says they like your podcast, you can't not say you like theirs. So I said, I like your podcast too. And I said, someone asked me to do it. One of your bookers asked me to do it. He said, oh, I'd love to have you on. It was going terribly well. And then I said, what's your main job now? And that's the laughter from the people in the audience who know that Ed Miliband is still an MP.
I mean, if this doesn't make the point, I mean, I'm just...
And I
should
said,
make the podcast.
Oh, fucking hell. And I said, I'm so sorry, of course you are. Of course you are. I don't know what made me say that. And he said, no, no one knows I'm an MP. I get asked all the time. He said, that's what happens in politics. You go out of the limelight and suddenly you're a backbencher again and everyone thinks you've resigned. I said, well, the Tories always do resign if they lose a posh job. I forget that Labour MPs stick around. That wasn't helpful. And just stick around on the backbench, wasting their time when they could have a job doing something productive was
they
what he heard.
Working for a pharmaceutical company.
It's clearly what he heard, because he then said, anyway, it's past my bedtime, I better go. And I thought... Yeah, he was just leaving the party. Fair play. Someone's got to be the last person you talk to at a party, I thought. An hour later, I saw him there. Now, maybe he just got into another series of interesting conversations. It happens. I told people I was leaving, and half an hour later, I was still trying to get out the door. That's possible. Or he just made an excuse to get away from the woman who asked, what's your main job now? Shame. Shame.
Shame.
But none of that is as bad as the time that I met. I wish I could tell you who it was, but I mustn't. A very famous actor in this country. Oh, this can't go on the podcast.
Colin Firth.
No. Younger. And I said, I introduced myself charmingly, reminding him that I'd met him before. It wasn't Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston?
But because sometimes I go on about Tom Hiddleston, but it wasn't him. I introduced myself to a young actor, and very charmingly, I thought, reminded him where he'd met me before. Since we'd hung out together, he'd become famous. So I said, oh, I remember you. We once had a lovely night together back in the day at this nightclub. Not like that. I charmingly reminded him when he'd last fucked me. No, that's not what I'm saying. I am nothing if not a bastion of etiquette. So I charmingly reminded him that we'd had a lovely night drinking together. We'd ended up sort of, you know, mostly the two of us just having a long chat. Contextualising myself. I think that's a lovely thing to do, because it's, you know, when you meet someone out of context,
yeah,
it's a lovely thing to do.
Just to remind them who you are.
Yeah. He's gone and gotten more famous. And he looked blank and said, I don't remember. Now, I told him everything he needed to know. All he had to say was, oh, yeah. He didn't need to put... He just said, I don't remember you. So I, again...
Who is this prick?
I, again, charmingly said, oh, don't worry. We'd all had so much... that night. I'm surprised any of us can remember anything. Now, that's very charming, I think. That's very charming. Because I'm making an excuse for him forgetting me. He then said, I don't do drugs. And I was like, no, he definitely had. So I said, he was on very famous...
Is this your natural face?
He was on a very famous television show at this point, and so I knew that he did do drugs. So I said, oh, God, I rarely, if ever, do drugs. I can't put this out on the internet, can I? I rarely, if ever, do drugs, but...
We've done 20 minutes, none of which we can put out on the internet.
I said, I rarely, if ever, do drugs.
It's going to be a very short episode.
It was a real one-off for me. And he said, I don't do drugs. And I said, oh, I'm sure, I'm probably misremembering. Probably it was other people who did drugs. And he said, I don't do drugs. And I was like, anyway, I then thought, just change the subject, just get out of this cul-de-sac. So I said, well, I'm so delighted to see how well you're doing, and I'm really enjoying your performances. A friend of mine directed you recently, said how wonderful you were. And he said, I don't do drugs. And I said, I'm sure you don't. Anyway, isn't it wonderful how this is happening for you and this is happening for you? And he said, I don't do drugs. And then I looked into his eyes and realised he was so hard. On I was like, oh, my God. And he thinks I'm from the Daily Mail. And we're both in this sort of showbiz party. And he thinks I am going to write a story and I'm trying to get him to confess. I'm not. I'm trying to get him off the subject. And all he said to me for 10 minutes, no matter what I said, was, I don't do drugs. It was so awful. So I just backed away that I just thought, I'm free to leave, actually. I just thought, I'm free to leave. It hadn't occurred to me I could walk away before this. But when he came up, I thought, I'm not dealing with that, because he's known to be not very charming. So I just walked away, went over to another friend, and I went, I've just had this terrible conversation with famous actor. And I said, he said, I don't do drugs, I don't do drugs. She went, he does do drugs. He goes to Burning Man every year. He's the druggiest drug in the whole drug. And I went, I know. But he's so scared. And I still get the chills from that. I still get, it's just being in this terrible loop with somebody.
That was excruciating. But, I mean, that was him, wasn't it? I mean, you can put a lot of that on him, yes. Whereas with me going, oh, you're blowing my face. You're like, oh, no, that's you, yeah. Love. That is 100%
no,
you.
Sure. But because I'm a woman, I have been trained since birth to feel awkwardness is my fault, must be managed by me, never instigated by me, and always killed by me. Awkwardness is my job. Yeah. Especially if I'm with a man.
If you're in a group of men and you say something, what I've noticed, if you're in a green room with a group of like male comedians and they're all like, that's what they sound like in my head. That's not how they sound. Just trying to tune in to your voices. You want to join in with, you don't want to join in with the banter, but you might say something and you'll be like, this is funny. This is going to be really funny. And then you say it and then they go, so anyway, and you're like, oh, I just want the floor to swallow me up. But it was funny. Whatever I said, it was funny. But there's that moment, yeah, where you go, oh, I'm not allowed in that banter thing. Whatever it is that you're doing, I've got to be the person that smiles and laughs at your jokes.
Yeah, that is very much
so this
the
is my smile face.
If you're listening at home, Jen is not smiling.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. Just to let you know, in case you haven't already heard, on the 3rd of March, I am comparing a show at the Roundhouse in London called Voices for Gaza. And it's got some extraordinary names in it. Palestinian string quartet called the Galilee Quartet, another Palestinian and Middle Eastern acts, but also people you'll know from The Guilty Feminist, like Jen Brister and Susie Wacoma, some other great comics, and actors like Brian Cox and Harriet Walter from Succession. It's £20 tickets because they're trying to absolutely pack the place. Just to be clear, I'm not producing this show. This has been put together very economically in a short period of time by a brilliant group of theatre practitioners in London as an emergency fundraiser for MAP, that's Medical Aid for Palestine. What they do is they send British doctors, medical supplies and medical equipment to Gaza. So this is really, really urgent. It's a very blitz spirit. If you get a £20 ticket, there's 250 seats on the floor and the rest will be standing. So if you really need a seat, get there really early on the night to bag yourself a seat. Otherwise, you will be standing. But as I said, it's blitz spirit, all muck in. So we hope you will be on board for it. There are, if you've got money, some VIP seats like in a dress circle section, which is all the money's going directly to MAP, are £250 each. If anyone would like one of those, I don't know that they're available on the Roundhouse website. So just email me at guiltyfeminist@gmail.com and I'll see if I can hook you up with the organisers to try and get you one of those. In the meantime, if you can't come, if you bought a ticket for 20 quid, you could, you know, give it to somebody else and all that money would be going to MAP. You could also, of course, donate to MAP directly. Also, I wanted to let you know we are doing an incredible new show, which is with Waterstones, the Guilty Feminist Waterstones Book Club. It will be on the 27th of March at Waterstones Piccadilly. And we are interviewing Susie Miller, who wrote the play Prima Facie and has now made that play a novel. Jessica Foster-Cure and I are talking to her, and we will have another guest as well to make it more like, so it'll be really like a book club. And we are contrasting it with feminist classics, because we thought this is a good time to revisit some feminist classics. Maybe some of us have never read Fear of Flying by Erica Jong. You can buy a ticket from Waterstones with one of those books included. If you read those books before the night, there'll be no spoilers. So try and come along for that, because I don't know when else you're going to see Susie Miller live on stage. And it's our very first book club we're hoping to do for a year, new books with feminist classics combined. We think it'll be a really great thing for all of us to delve into those feminist classics and discover brand new books. We've also got shows coming up at King's Place in March and April. Go to guiltyfeminist.com live shows and you can find tickets for all of these things. And now on with the podcast.
Our guests today are the author of the book Everything I Know About Love, out now in paperback with a new chapter on Everything I Know at 30. This book has been on the Sunday Times bestseller list for so long. It is an absolute phenomenon. And also a comedian that you know and love, who's a Guilty Feminist regular. Please welcome to the stage the spectacular Dolly Alderton and Guilty Feminist favourite Kemar Bob. So Dolly Alderton, everybody loves your book. It's a delightful, delightful book, and it's very confessional. What drove you to want to talk about shame?
I think writing a first-person memoir, I really resist use of the word confessional, actually, because I've realised over a period of time of talking about it as a confessional book, the kind of subtext of that is that there was a sin that was committed that I'm confessing to the world.
Oh, that's a good point. So we shouldn't say confessional, because it sounds like
you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, a lot of my one-star Amazon reviews do think that.
You've got many more five-star reviews, though. It's a phenomenal book, and it's been a big hit. You're now doing live tours. You've been playing the Palladium and stuff because of this book. People love this book.
Thank you. But it has been a bit of a kind of immersion experience in resisting shame, because the kind of things that I'm writing about, I think it's so gendered with how we allow women and how we allow men to kind of feel free and have fun and have supposed transgressions and then write them up. I know I shouldn't admit to this, I really do comb through the one-star Amazon reviews on Nights of Insomnia.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, don't pick that spot.
It's easier to remember the bad things.
Of course. But my favourite, most shaming one that is kind of tattooed on the underside of my mind is someone who wrote, "The drinking and the shagging has got to stop."
Wow. Was that your mum? Did your mum leave that review?
Dolly. Sounds like the drinking and the shagging hasn't started for somebody else.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like this like cyber therapist who just reads people's books and then goes into their comments and gives them unsolicited advice. That sounds great.
But I mean, what would they say to Charles Dickens? You know.
I wanted to know, no one's saying the drinking, the shagging has got to stop on Keith Richards' memoir, and I'm not saying that I'm the female version, but maybe I am.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. When it's a lad, it's like, oh, it's so rock and roll. And when it's a woman, it's like, oh, you need to tone that back now. It's all right to have a misspent youth, but, you know, as soon as you hit a certain age as a woman, you then...
Yeah, you've got to wind it in, haven't you?
You have to wind it in, or society will judge it. And, of course, you don't have to, and some people never do, but it's harder to sustain it shamelessly. Do you manage your shame? Do you think, have you learnt, have you grown? Was the book therapy or do you do therapy? Have you learnt to manage your shame that you think is imposed upon you by the society?
I think it's something I still struggle with, to be totally honest. I've just written a column about something that I call I'm in trouble syndrome, which I only kind of identified recently, that I sort of always move through the world. And I think this is by dint of being female, sadly. Constantly feeling like, you know, when you go to an airport and suddenly when you go through the security gates, you're like, oh, have I accidentally packed 10 kilos of heroin and and a
every
gun?
Every time
I think
in
I have.
My case. It's never not there.
You should remember your mum's in the audience, Kira, just to be clear.
Dude, there's not much...
Your mum's not going to let you pack her bag on the way back, is she? She's like, I'll pack my own bag, Kima.
There's not a lot of shame between us, okay? All my favourite vibrators have been gifts from this woman.
Really?
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
I read a tweet that you tweeted, so I assume it's fair game to talk about because it's already on the internet.
It's in the ether.
It's yeah, that you said that what something your mum said to Nish Kumar.
I got this cool opportunity to open for Nish Kumar, which is super dope because my mom's never seen me do comedy before. So I was really relieved that she got to see it in a cool space and not in a creepy basement, because if you guys have been to London comedy, you know it happens everywhere. And we were like talking about that movie Vice, which is about like George Bush's pregnancy.
I want to see that film.
George Bush's pregnancy as president and his vice president, who's called Dick Cheney. And my mom goes to Nish, didn't see the movie. And I like Dick, but Cheney not so much. What?
I no love shame. That your mum's like that, because you're not raised with shame then. Do you feel you were raised with shame, Dolly?
Okay, so just as a contrast to that.
Everyone's mum isn't like that?
My mother came across my bullet vibrator when I was 16. It's sort of the gateway drug for many women. Nan Summers, it was my first one. Don't want to get too misty-eyed nostalgic about it. And the reason I know that she found it is when I came up to my bedroom, it was on my bed in a sock.
Oh, wow. How had she found it? Was she tidying
your
room?
She sheathed it for you.
She was tidying it, and she decided to sheathe it passive-aggressively, so I also knew that she was aware it was there.
Oh.
But maybe she was just like, okay, so I don't want any dust to settle on it. I'll put it in a sock.
I think it was a coded message to use a condom.
Oh, perhaps.
Did you never talk about it with her?
No, we didn't have that many conversations about it. My mum's very progressive, despite the sock incident. and she's very liberal. But I think I carry quite a lot of shame around sex. And I think even in the most progressive households, that is so kind of, when it comes to teaching young women about their sexuality, it's so cultural and deep-rooted and biblical and inherited and epigenetic and traumatic. I think even with the best intentions, girls are raised often to still feel very dirty and ashamed and messy and weird about sex. Mm. An example that I always think about is that in my family home, I was told my boyfriend could never stay in my bedroom. So even boyfriends of like 2 years couldn't stay in my bedroom. And then the night that my little brother brought a girl back for the very first time, she stayed in his bedroom. And I know that sounds like a small, petty thing, and my God, did I chew over this fact with my therapist for many an hour, and subsequently my mum. But that does send a pretty traumatic message to a young woman, I think.
Mm. I think it's the idea of protecting women. Like, men can go out and forge their own lives, and they have agency, and they can do make choices. But women, we're not allowed to make the same active choices, that we need to be protected from ourselves.
Yes.
And even if people don't believe that we need to be protected from ourselves, we need to be protected from men, because men can't be trusted.
Can I ask the panel, what are you not ashamed of that society tells us we should be ashamed of? What's your best shamelessness?
I think, for me, it would definitely have to be deciding to find a solution to the guilt I felt about the adult entertainment that I was consuming. I said, how can I fix this? And the answer has been white male on white male gay porn. And I probably should have more shame, but I know that no women of color were harmed in the making of those films.
Very true.
Brings me a lot of peace.
That is a phenomena amongst lesbians is watching gay male porn for that very reason, that it's sex. People are getting off, you can see people are getting off.
Having a great time.
And they're having a great time because you can see things are happening. And so you don't feel like, oh, she's not, look, there's one in her eyeball. No, she's not enjoying that. You know, like you can feel like I can get off on this and I don't feel like anyone's being exploited. I mean, I'm sure they are. But
I mean, obviously there can be exploitation, but I think there's not the same feeling of physical upper body strength that one man couldn't push another man off.
I don't know what it is. All I know is there probably should be a shame and there is not.
Jen, is there anything you're not ashamed of that you think society teaches you should be?
I suppose for me, it's body hair. I think I've been told to feel ashamed about that, and I just don't.
Respect.
Dolly, is there anything you should be ashamed of?
I've got to shave my legs this afternoon, and I felt really joyful about it in the cab on the way here, because I thought this is exactly the right space to not shave your legs.
Yeah. Bring it.
I think that I have become less ashamed about wanting success and wanting to make money. I think I felt masses and masses of shame about that for quite a long time.
Oh, why?
Because I think I felt like it was greedy or unfeminine, maybe. But I've had to kind of really deconstruct that, and I now feel totally, totally fine about it.
Yeah, when it starts coming in, you're like, oh, this feels good.
I think we are conditioned not to be... I hear this from people a lot, though. They say, oh, she's very ambitious, and that's a pejorative, but he's very ambitious never is.
It's so lame.
Also, if she's very ambitious, it's like, oh, she's like a bit of a bitch, or she's going to do anything to get to the top or whatever. Mm. It's like, if a guy's ambitious, just following his natural course of, you know, the natural progression of his career. Yeah. It's the same in comedy, isn't it? You know,
I think I used to think I was just too much. Like, just, you know, I could go to a party and I'd really be on and I'd be really funny and, like, talking a million miles a minute, whatever. And I knew people were having a good time and people were laughing. But then I'd go away and I'd go, oh, that was too much, that was too much. I'm too much. And I used to feel a lot of shame about being too much. Mm. And now I think I've channeled that by doing comedy. Mm. And so I feel like, no, I'm the right amount.
Deborah, you should never have a charisma hangover, ever. It should never feel shame about that.
Do you ever feel you're too much, though? Does anyone else feel that?
Yeah, God, I always, like, if you go out, you know, you go out for a drink or for dinner with people, and then, again, if you've had a drink, and then I wake up and I go, oh, what did I say? Oh, God, did I let anyone speak? Oh, am I just a dreadful human being? Yeah. I frequently have those. Does anybody else have that?
Yeah.
You're saying everybody thinks I'm a prick.
Do you know what? I don't have that. Do you know why? All my friends did when we were, you know, younger, going out drinking and stuff. All my friends had it. And the reason I don't have it is because I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. So from my teenage years to my early 20s, I was a Jehovah's Witness. And we didn't do anything. So there was no drinking, there was no smoking, there was no drugs, there was no sex. So anytime, even now to this day, if I get smashed, which I very rarely do, but if I get smashed, I wake up in the morning and go...
Whoa, you were like smashed and I was like, which one? And then you meant ingesting substances.
Just drugs. Oh, no. Drink. Smash usually means drink.
Cool. I thought you were telling...
Not ashamed. I'm not ashamed.
I listen to a lot of music with a lot of weird euphemisms.
No. So if I go out, it's British slang for pissed.
Okay.
So, which is not angry, it's drunk. Okay. So...
It's too much!
If I wake up in the morning and I had too much to drink the night before, my first response is, not a Jehovah's Witness. Yes! So I genuinely don't have shame because I don't associate it with an adolescence where, oh, how embarrassing, or what did I say, or did I have sex with someone I shouldn't have? I don't have those associations. I have the opposite associations, which is I'm a square, I'm a handmaid, I'm a prude. And again, I've shaken off some of this shame of feeling like I'm ashamed that I got into a cult and a high control group and how could I have fallen for that? And even though I was only 14, I used to carry a lot of shame. Like, people would judge me. I never wanted to tell anybody. And I have now gone, look, this is something that happened. It happens to lots of people. You're not stupid.
All these things shape you anyway. They make you who you are, and there shouldn't be shame about any of the things that we do, even if they are embarrassing or, like, you know. I mean, I still have shame about it. When I was 14 and I was walking across the street and I was at school. You know when you're at school and you're doing your GCSEs or something and you've got, like, 25,000 books in your bag. You've got a rucksack and you're just like, oh, girl, I've got triple biology and then fucking English. And you're carrying all these books. And I remember I was very insecure about the way I looked. I had a unibrow, you know, acne, closet lesbian, but still didn't know what was going on. There was this young guy in, like, a convertible car as I was crossing this zebra crossing. And in my head, I was like, he's looking at me. This guy is looking at me. And I was like, I couldn't get my head around it. So I was like looking at him going, he's looking at me. And I was looking at him and he was looking at me and he was smiling. And I was smiling. I thought, is this what flirting is? Am I being flirted? And then I fell into a bin.
Oh. Yep.
Because I walked, it was one of those bins that was waist high and I fell in it, but, and I wouldn't have fallen in, but because of my rucksack, which was like full of books, it just went, just carried me in to the bin and I had to crawl out.
Jeez.
It's pretty humiliating.
Do you still think about it?
I still think about that, yeah. And that happened 30 years ago.
Jesus.
I think he might still be thinking about it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm like, I mean, it was a really good floor show. He was laughing. People stopped in the street. They were laughing. I mean, it was my first standing ovation.
I stunned her so hard. I smiled at her. I just smiled at her. Yeah, man, just smiled. She fell in a trash can. Yeah. I got her. Like,
then I laughed at her.
Jeez. My most recent and the worst... Oh, this is I don't even know if it's as bad as it feels. So please help me to determine. So there's, like, this guy, he's like a cute guy, right? I think he's, like, so cute, and, like, we ran into each other. I'm Pam, by the way, so whenever I think guys are cute, I'm always like, oh, this is so cool. And I'm just like, oh, you gotta like me back? Do dudes like me anymore? Anyway, so I'm, like, chatting with him, and I'm like, oh, yeah, being, like, trying to be flirty, but also being awkward. And he was like, oh, I'm gonna go to this Japanese restaurant. And in my head, I was like, is that an invitation? At the same time, I'm thinking, is that an invitation? I was like, I don't know how to use chopsticks. Because I've been thinking about chopsticks a lot recently. Because my flatmate's from Singapore and I want to know how to use them, but I don't want to ask him because I feel like that's culturally insensitive. It was a lot. And so I was having this whole thing. And he was like, do you like Japanese food? And I was thinking all about the chopsticks. And I just go, I've heard of it. It hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. Right now it hurts.
I hear that. Dolly, before we close with our musical segment, anything else to tell us about shame? Anything you feel ashamed about? Any reason to release ourselves from shame? Anything you want to tell us about your book? Anything at all?
I think everyone is quite rightly still thinking about the Japanese story. Yeah.
I eat any food. Yes, I eat Japanese any food.
Do you know how to use chopsticks?
Yes, I do know how to use chopsticks.
I don't need this from you guys.
But I'm very aware that I do not want to shame you on that.
No, no.
I learned, by the way. Thank you. Because I wasn't going to let that happen.
Happen again.
I was like, never
Bye.
Again.
Dolly Alderton's book, Everything I Know About Love, in paperback, because you've got a new chapter, Everything I Know at 30. By 30, you've already written a Sunday Times bestseller. You're an amazing, amazing woman.
Oh, thank you.
No, that is a huge achievement. Huge achievement. Absolutely livid.
Jen, have you got anything else to plug?
Yes, quickly, I've got a book coming out. I've got a book coming out. And I've got a book coming out in September, and it's called The Other Mother. It's about being the other mother. And it's very funny.
Yay! You might like it. Anywhere else we can see you or anything? Do you want us to follow you or anything like that, Dolly?
You can listen to my show. Am I allowed to talk about other podcasts?
Yes.
Pollinate.
Yeah, of course, we're a feminist podcast. No, bitch. Don't. I will not have them listening to anything else. This is 24/7. Their ears are opened up as in Clockwork Orange, only all
every day's a Monday.
You can listen to my podcast, The High Low, which is every Wednesday, a news and pop culture podcast.
I've been on that. It's great.
Yeah, you're fab.
Charity of the Week. Where's Charity of the Week?
Good evening. My name is Mimi. I am a member of Happy Babies community. We are a young charity without a big building, but with a huge hope. Hope for moms who have had to leave their homes, their families, and carry their babies, who have had to take long, horrible, and trafficking journey just looking for peace and hope.
In 2018, the Happy Baby community provided support for more than 450 new mothers who have fled from the unimaginable horrors of being trafficked, tortured, or persecuted. These new mothers don't have their own mums, sisters, or friends to support them. They're alone with a new baby, living in London on £37.50 a week, quite invisible to most of us in our busy lives. Working with 25 other London charities, we provide professional support, including antenatal classes, psychological therapy and English lessons, and essential practical items, including baby clothes and buggies, hospital bags and sanitary pads. Most importantly, though, we provide a community where you don't have to share your story, but where you can share your ambitions for yourself and your baby and feel that you belong. What makes the Happy Baby community different to others is that we're now giving our members the opportunity to take on the leadership of the charity. We have 28 women training to be trustees, leaders, and community ambassadors. They have academic and professional skills and are committed to learning and leading. These resilient women are not going to accept being invisible. They are not going to allow their ambitions to go unnoticed. They are going to run this charity themselves, to be one of the only human rights charities in the UK that is entirely led and run by its beneficiaries. A small donation of just £10 will enable one woman to attend one training session to become a leader. Please help us realize the ambitions of these brilliant women. You can text Happy Baby to 70085 to donate £10, or donate through our website at happybabycommunity.org.uk, or see one of our volunteers in white t-shirts in the lobby after the show. Thank you very much.
Yes! Grace Petrie! Grace Petrie, come to the mic. And bring us home on our shame episode with your beer.
Okay. Hello, guilty feminists. Okay, I've got some good shame for you. Is that good? Is that all right? I enjoyed Jen's story very much about not being vegan. Have we got any vegans in? Yeah, never quite the same reaction you get in Brighton, to be honest. I'm not vegan, but I am in love with a vegan. My girlfriend is vegan. And if you haven't seen me before or know what I do, I'm basically a protest singer. I sing songs about politics with a view to trying to make the world a better place. I'm also a lesbian. Those two factors combined mean that people always assume I'm at least vegetarian. At least. And I'm not. I'm not at all. You know, I see what I do. You know, people ask me if singing songs about politics is actually making any difference. My honest response to that is I don't know, right? I don't know if I am. I don't know if I can make a difference. I think I'm not the best singer in the world. I'm not the best guitarist in the world. But I think if I have any talent at all, it is that I have an ability to sort of articulate this struggle. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to talk about the struggle in a way that hopefully makes other people feel less alone in their individual struggles. And honestly, being in love with a vegan is the most difficult struggle I've ever been through in my entire life. So I wrote a song about being in love with a vegan, and it's called The Vegan Song. And there are, I should warn you, some very shameful, ideologically problematic confessions in this song. A fella in Cambridge hissed at me. So, you know, if the mood takes you, feel free, guys. I've never been that good at recycling. Sometimes I shove it all into the same bin. That used to be all right before the Blue Planet. Now people just fucking hate me when they see it in their eyes, you're a monster. I've never been that good at recycling. Sometimes, but not very often, I shove it all into the same bin. And I find meat substitutes, they're just not the same thing. And I've got running shoes made by Nike. But baby, ever since I met you, when I'm in a restaurant and I'm looking at the menu, I find I'm noticing the options made with tofu. Wondering what I could cook that you might like. And I'll learn to live without artificial additives. If I could be the one who brings you tea in the morning, then I'll make it dairy free. If it was me that got to make your tea in the morning, then I'll prose fine by me. Oh darling, if you let me, I'll walk you down the free from aisle. I would give it all to make you smile if you'd agree that I can be the one that makes your tea. Enjoyer, and I slag off nut roast sometimes just to annoy you. But if the only milk I ever got to drink was, you know what you're doing, it would be worth it all to share your fridge. And come what may, the winters and the summers, I know the hard times, they will never overcome us. And to work hard to always keep you in hummus would be my lifelong privilege. And I'll learn to live without artificial additives. There's nothing I wouldn't give if I could be the one who brings you tea in the morning. Then I'll make it dairy free. If it was me that got to make your tea in the morning, then I'll prose fine by me. Oh darling, if you let me, I'll get a solar panel trial. I would give it all to make you smile if you'd agree that I can be the one that makes your tea. Now in this life, we face some stormy weather. But if you should decide that we could get rained on together, then I could do it all without ever buying leather. And only fair trade jeans upon my legs. It's true that I've got a heavy dairy intake, and I'm probably not ever gonna give up steak. But if I could be the one who makes your Sunday pancakes, well, I'll learn how to do it without the eggs, and I'll learn to live without artificial additives. If I could start to win your artichoke heart, then I could be you tea in the morning, and I'll make it dairy free. If it was me that got to make your tea in the morning, even Earl Grey's fine by me. Oh darling, if you let me, I'll walk you down that free front aisle. I would give it all to make you smile if you'd agree. I'd be the best me I could ever be if it was me that got to make your tea. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Grace Petrie, everybody. That's our show. We've been the Guilty Feminists. I've been Deborah Francis White. Good night. Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host, co-host, Anna, various special guests, Dolly Alderton. Pete Mubber. Recording engineer was Chris Sharp. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinsky for the Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Zoe Jacob, Sally, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
And I realised... Ow! Pretend you've not heard this before. Did you just hit yourself in the head?
Yeah. Sorry, it's only my temple lobe.
Did you hit yourself in the head with a microphone? This is why women shouldn't do comedy.
Yeah, I don't know how to use a knob.
So I realised I'd use the... You'd be pretty.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.